get a pie.
They did?
No, no. Mayor or Councilmember Bustos for being,
Went to the bathroom?
Yeah, that's right.
At times, it's a real topic.
We wouldn't dare start this meeting without you. We ready, everybody? Okay. I'd like to call the Monday, February 4th meeting of the Finance Committee to order. We will start with the approval of the minutes.
So moved.
All in favor of approval of the minutes signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Okay, we are now in the public comment period. So if there is anyone that would like to speak, please come to the podium, state your name and address for the record. And now's the time for that. So anybody that has something to say, not part of the presentations on the agenda, just anyone from the public. Okay. Seeing none, we must be doing a really great job if the public's not coming to say things. Item number three is a consideration of the funding request by Housing for All Mount Pleasant. I will have one small little editorial before they begin, but I remember when we received the very nicely written letter about appropriating more money, it was like, why don't you tell us what you're doing, update us on what's going on, as opposed to having the first letter be, can we have more money? So that's what today's about. And I know that you're prepared and we're anxious to hear you, so you can go to the podium and start the presentation.
Hey everybody, how are you? My name's Melissa Moore. I am the brand new Director of Operations for Housing for All Mount Pleasant. I am joined here today by my co-director, Wendy Bauerschmidt, and she is working on as a Director of Development. I also am joined by board members Chris Brooks and Sally Jacob. Thank you. What?
And Benji Cook.
Oh, Benji, hey, good to see you. So thank you, first of all, for allowing us to make this presentation today. And thank you for the seed funds that you gave us last year, which gave me this fantastic job that allows me to work with the most dedicated board of directors and in the town where I grew up. So I actually am a graduate of Wando High School. I went to Wando before it had its own zip code, and I graduated College of Charleston. And so this work has very deep meaning for me. My family is from Mount Pleasant for generations. I grew up in Hobcaw in the Old Village. So we have really, really hit the ground running. This is, I believe, my 31st day on the job. And since I began, we have established our 501c3, which will let us raise money, which is great. So we don't have to keep asking you for it, right? So we've established our 501c3. We've launched our website and started educating the public about who we are and what we do. And we've already started developing partnerships, which we hope will result in the development of attainable housing units as early as next year. We are having our board retreat this week as well, so we should be able to roll out a strategic plan very soon. So I'm here to request an additional $50,000 and any available discretionary funds that you may have. These funds will be used to develop detailed plans for workforce housing units, which will be presented to town council upon completion. We will also need to launch a public education campaign and connect qualifying home buyers to workshops on financial literacy and things like that. All of those things cost money. We are pursuing grants, including the Town of Mount Pleasant Community Investment Grant. Those things take time, and they're not guaranteed to come through. The earliest funding should come through probably in the middle of the year, and the money that we're requesting will help us continue operating until those grant funds can come through. Our work will benefit the town in two very, very significant ways. One is livability. The other is economic development. Mount Pleasant citizens deserve to live in a town where they are not plagued with traffic congestion and where emergency services can reach them when disasters occur. As it stands, 72% of the workforce of Mount Pleasant lives outside the town, so that means that 32,000 people commute in every day, 28,000 commute out for work. That puts a burden on our road infrastructure, and it costs taxpayers. So most of the people, the first responders, the teachers, the people who work in hospitality have to live in places like Somerville and Goose Creek, and that's part of the reason why there's so much traffic congestion. So, you know, the development of attainable housing will not only decrease the number of commuters, it will allow first responders to reach residents faster when natural disasters occur, not if, but when things like earthquakes occur, which Charleston is overdue for a big earthquake. Our bridges are not going to be passable. So if our first responders are living outside the town, they're not going to be able to get to people in a timely manner when people need help. And when these things happen, you know, a second, a minute could mean the difference between life and death. So we want to make sure that these people can afford to live in the town. And in order for Mount Pleasant to thrive, it needs to be a hub for businesses to grow, and a place that seniors, first responders, young professionals, and hospitality industry talent can live, learn, and earn. So we want to position Mount Pleasant for long-term success, and we feel like the development of attainable housing will do that. So I don't want to take any more of your time laying out the problems. We all know what the problems are, and we are working on the solutions. And again, we look forward to presenting our plan after we have our board and staff retreat this week.
Any questions from the committee?
I have a couple questions. So this is all associated. We were going to discuss the request today, Tom?
Yes.
Chairman?
Yes.
I guess my first question is, I saw the article in the paper, but when exactly did you take over the position?
I started in January.
Okay, so just a month, right? That's what I thought. Okay. And your predecessor was Jack Little?
Yes.
Okay. And when we first did the $50,000 grant, which we did through this committee as one of our outside the town requests for mm-hmm. money, which was granted in July, right?
Yes.
So what would you say, because a lot of the things you're describing, which are all great, are things that, there's two of you are full-time workers, and
yes.
then the rest are all volunteers, is that right?
Yes.
Okay. I guess I'm just wondering, you're brand new there, so it's not fair for you to have to answer to this, but you might know the answer. Why are we not a little further along, or are we, and I'm just not hearing that part of, because there's a couple different ways. I mean, I've been very, very involved in fundraising mm-hmm. with nonprofits in the past and still sit on the board of, one that I've been on for 20 years. Things like fundraising events and things like going out to corporations mm-hmm. and talking to them about not so much just grants, but outright donations to help as seed money mm-hmm. and things of that nature. It seems like we'd be hearing more about that unless I'm just missing.
Sure. Well, from what I understand, of course, my board members can probably speak to your question better than I can, but we didn't get our 501c3 established until November. I didn't start, and Wendy didn't start, actually, my co-director, we didn't start until last month. So we couldn't really raise any money until we had the 501c3, and I believe we were told to halt operations until we had that letter that said, you know, we're a 501c3. So I think we've done pretty well considering we've only been really working for about a month.
Yeah, so just as an addendum to that, when we had the request back in July, I think we were given the impression that it was forthcoming. Almost any time, maybe Councilman Bustos might remember because I remember we discussed it. And so I guess I just thought maybe it had already been in place earlier. Mm-hmm. That spinoff from task force to create a 501c3 was a year and a half ago, right?
Yes.
About that. And so didn't realize it took that long to actually have the letter in hand. So thank you.
Sure.
Mr. Bustos?
Eric, how much has the town put toward this effort?
Yes, sir. Back in fiscal year 18, the amount of money the town paid for the consultant along with attorney fees to help set up the 501c3 amounts to just under $37,000. That was fiscal year 18. So that's just under $37,000. Fiscal year 19, they received a grant through our community investment program of $50,000. So that was fiscal year 19. And then fiscal year 20, they just applied for another installment in the community investment program of $50,000. We've received that application, and in addition to that, we have the request in front of us today.
Okay. So the community grant is an additional $50,000?
That's right, sir.
Today?
Yeah.
Okay. So that's $187,000. you know, I think this is a worthwhile effort, but I think the town has kind of done what they should do. You know, probably the only thing I would be agreeable to is making it some, set aside $50,000 and then make it as a matching sum. If they raise $5,000, we'll match it for $5,000. We've already put, like I said, $187,000 towards this, and you know, it's been, what, $4,200 is all that's been raised? Is that correct?
Through the donate to it, yes.
Yeah, okay. So I think our $50,000 now, to provide incentive, that we should match up to $50,000 going forward.
Where would the funds come from if we were to vote to do this
as
a council?
Good question, Ms. Landing. I think what we would do would be, we're about to show you the mid-year budget adjustments, and so we would include it as part of that, those adjustments. We would either have to, we'd have to get it from some sort of contingency or reserve account. So whether it came from the one that is currently housed this year in our budget, or it came from your undesignated fund balance, it would be a pull from reserves of some sort.
So a couple things. One is, it's really the corporations that have the employees on either side of the bridge that are having to commute that mm-hmm. are probably the most vested, certainly the town of Mount Pleasant overall, because this is our community, all of our community, all of our residents and leadership. And so it seems that reaching out to them, and maybe you already are starting to do that.
Are.
And so I like the idea of the matching funds grant. You say you have a matching funds grant already. Mm-hmm. Is that something you're able to tell who that is or no?
We can. Some people donate anonymously, but it is difficult to make the pitch to people who are individual donors. So yes, I do agree with you that a corporate fundraising strategy is something we're pursuing. Individual donors, this isn't, it's not puppies and it's not homelessness, right? So people, individual donors like to give to things like that. Mm-hmm. This is something that, you know, other municipalities are working with millions of dollars, and we're, you know, we're trying to put together what we can put together. But yes, I agree.
I also, this is slightly off topic because it's not about whether we would do the grant or not, but I just had a discussion the other day. The Mayor's Economic Advisory Board has a member, Jennifer Maxwell. I mentioned this in the hallway to you, and she is Director of Sales, I believe, Sales and Marketing for the Raines Hospitality Group, and I'm also on the Convention and Visitors Bureau Board, and those, which of course is Explore Charleston and so forth, and brought up the idea that I asked the question, and it was in this morning's paper, what is our occupancy rate for hotels in our community? And I thought it was really high. I thought it was maybe 90%. I mean, I didn't know. And when I asked the question, she said it's about 70%.
Wow.
And there was something in the paper this morning about occupancy is down, but overall revenue is up because we have a lot more hotels. So this is an issue because we've been building a lot. Where am I going with this? I said, what if you took 10% of your stock, which is, of course, in this case, rooms, mm-hmm. and set them aside as part of your recruiting package when you're trying to hire workers. And I said, I got the idea because all knowledge is relevant. And when I was in college, I worked for a resort in upstate New York, Chautauqua, it was called. And that's what we did. As, you know, waitresses, cooks, whatever it was, you lived right on property.
Right.
And you can make it. And I said, how many additional applications do you think you'd get? She said, oh, my gosh, we'd probably have our pick. And I said, exactly. So that's the kind of thinking that I know that's not exactly your mandate, but in a way it is, because if we could bring a lot of those 32,000 that are commuting over the bridge from Goose Creek and all these other places and have them live right here in our hotels, I don't see why we have 30% rooms empty and not being used for something. So 10% wouldn't take that much off their table. So I just would like to think that we're doing some outside-the-box thinking.
Absolutely. I was going to say it's that kind of outside-the-box thinking that we're pursuing.
Great. Thank you.
Mr. Santos?
Yeah, I just have a couple of questions. Do y'all plan to build through partnerships, local partnerships, the affordable housing? In other words, work with Habitat for Humanity in order to build the affordable housing?
We are still in the exploratory phases now, but I will let Benji speak to that. Yeah.
Hi, good morning. Benji Cook, 329 Tidal Place Circle. Mr. Sanchez, to answer your question, absolutely. I don't think at this stage, given the number of options and the large problem in front of us, that we specifically have the mandate of this is exactly how we're going to do it. I would like to address one thing to Mr. Bustos to back up. We have not been given $187,000. We've requested today $50,000. To date, we've been given $87,000. When that $50,000 came across from you all last summer, the first batch of it, we had to hire outside counsel to set up the 501c3, and we hired folks that are professional to do that. We had a part-time gentleman, Jack Little, that was mentioned, that Jack worked for us on a part-time basis to shepherd our effort along. We went through a process at the end of the year, got over 125 applications, and hired two of the most talented people in the field that we have leading the effort now. To date, we've been a group of volunteers, some retired, some of us not retired, that have been addressing an effort that we were quite passionate about. So, you know, for whatever that's worth, I think that needs to be said, that we've done, I think the strides that we've made, given the time and the resources that we have, are really impressive.
Okay, thank you. And also, y'all plan on providing affordable and or forgivable mortgages?
Again, that's a wonderful question, Mr. Santos. I think you're getting into some the finance and the legal part of this, and things that you have to, based on the dollars you take from wherever they come from, all of them come with, you know, with strings, their own guidelines and stipulations. To tell you today that we're definitely going to do that would be irresponsible. I know that this is not, you know, we're going to have to work with things, to Ms. Landing's point, that are completely outside the box. If it were easy, I don't think this group would be formed.
Yeah. Lastly, are y'all planning on setting up an affordable housing trust as your mechanism for helping your clients find affordable housing?
I think I could tell you that I guess I would answer that by saying yes, but it's what goes inside that box and how the funds are put in there, how they're administered, and to who they go to, that's where we're headed. Right now, the money that we've asked for, that we're using to date, is from operations to have leaders like Melissa push us forward.
Lastly, you said you spent $50,000 on legal trying to get your 501?
No, sir. The $50,000, the initial, I don't have that figure in front of me, but we do not have the luxury of counsel, so we had to hire outside counsel. The funds that we are still, you know, using right now, we have not depleted those funds, but we are in a position now, in order to press forward with the energy and the strides that we've made, that we do need money.
Yeah, but the funds that you used to hire that outside counsel, how much was that?
I could probably say, but I believe it was it Chris?
Yeah, I've got it all here. That fiscal year 18, when we paid for the consultant, that was 30 grand. That same year, the town paid for the attorney fees for the 501c3. That was $6,995.
Good. Thank you very much. I'm good.
Okay. Thank you.
And I have a question.
Please.
And I I don't know how the other eight elected people would feel about this, but I thought if I can get an answer from you first, we could think about going forward. I think the difficulty for me, speaking as one person, is this isn't the first time that the group has come looking for seed money to move forward. I get that. But the issue that you're solving is big in this town. It's really big. I don't know if there's a committee meeting that we haven't been through where we've spoken about how we wish teachers and firefighters and police officers and other people that work in this town can live in this community. So we're all about that. Would there be any, even though you were a nonprofit and you're separate, would there be any willingness to allow a council member to sit on your board? And again, I don't know if other people will do it, but what I'd like to see stop is another meeting asking for more money, another meeting asking for more money, another meeting asking for more money. If this is a problem with us, we should be looking at partnering. And it is our goal, as well as your goal, to not need any of our money. Mm-hmm. But I think us working together as partners, mm-hmm. solving our problem, might work a little bit better. Would you be open to something like that, maybe?
Chairman O'Rourke, we would welcome that. We would completely agree. We were formed as a group. It was an advisory board that turned into a nonprofit. And the day that we were given our seed money, we were sent documentation wishing us luck. And today we're here. We would absolutely welcome a partnership with the town of Mount Pleasant.
Yeah. Again, I have not spoken to anyone about this. Wait, one second, Mr. Bustos.
I'm Sarah Jacob, and I'm also on the task force. I need to speak
okay,
to
I'm sorry,
question.
You win.
You
Go
were
ahead.
In the bylaws, and we were asked to take you out.
I was in the bylaws?
Not you personally, but the town.
Okay.
We asked that the town have a member on our board,
okay.
And the town asked us to take
the Thank you, ma'am.
Staff member.
Mr. Bustos.
Staff member.
As I remember this, when we went back, our effort was to get them funded for their director, seed money, whatever you want to call it, and then to hand this effort off to the 501c3, mm-hmm. and they were going to be independent of the town. And the fear that was expressed was,
supposed to be up here, aren't I? The fear that was expressed was that if we were part of that, that would just create a liaison or someone who's vested in town council keep
funding,
acting on behalf of the affordable housing or whatever it was at that time. And I think the understanding was, as a matter of fact, I know the understanding was that after it was set up and we had funded it, that we were going to be hands off. And now we're back for 50,000 grant.
Yes.
There's one grant. And now another 50,000 ask. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. I think the town has done what they said they were going to do.
Kathy?
So one point of clarification is what I heard was that it was a staff member that was originally going to serve, and that's a little different scenario. The benefit of having an elected official on there is that, after all, we're the ones that hear directly from the public and answer directly to the public, and then we ask staff to help us with things. And there was some, I remember the conversation now, the discussion, there was some discomfort with having a staff member who is more in a position where they're going to be following requests from council. So this would be different. It would definitely be different to have a council member serve on your board. And also, there's definitely a precedent for it because I've been appointed by our mayor to serve on two different boards that are relevant to, what we do here. So what was the other thing? Oh, so if I'm understanding correctly, according to the original plan, in fiscal 2019, we will be already doing another 50, or that will be coming up as we have to approve it again?
Yes. 50 to 50.
So we're looking at 50 that would get you from now till 2019, which is July.
Yes, ma'am.
And then 50. And just wondering if it's a nice round number. Would 20 get you there? Would 25 get you there? I'm not trying to be a horse trader here, but I'm just saying that just seems like a big round number that keeps coming up. And I'm just wondering, is that what you really need in order to make it? Because once you're up and running and you're taught, now that you are 501c3, great directors, great, folks, you should be able to start having corporations help, and then hopefully the public as well, and maybe even do a nice fundraiser.
Yes, ma'am.
Or two.
I'd like to introduce Chris Brooks, just had a couple comments, my board member.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, appreciate it. Glad the opportunity to talk to answer your question specifically. Yeah, I'm at 766 Chatter. Been in Mount Pleasant for 34 years. A lot of you know me. But I was one of the original task members along with Benji and Dr. Jacobs. So we got a little, we got over 2 years in this, although the staff is young. But looking at your question specifically and some of your earlier questions, we started in the early fall, knocking on doors, talking to a lot of the corporate partners here in Mount Pleasant, some very large, all with a great deal of interest on their part. But of course, we did not have that 501c3 letter from IRS. That came out of the Cincinnati office. We've all heard about them. And it took a long time. You know, you never know when it's coming out. But even with our urging, it finally came to us in November. So we're making the rounds back to these corporate partners. And I really think the idea of a matching proposition, you know, I was in fundraising too for years with East Cooper Meals on Wheels. I retired from there. But matching grants are appealing to a lot of corporate partners. They said, you know, we can get a dollar if you give us a dollar. And they really, really like to see that. So I think that's a great opportunity for us. It opens the door to continue to do our work to look at outside funding. We are doing the work that the City of Charleston does, Charleston County does, North Charleston does, through their own staff and offices. So we're doing that work for the town, and it does cost money. We envision it costing more money. That's why we're asking for more. As we gear up, that pace is going to pick up, dealing with particular clients, dealing with partners with land, dealing with an education program, dealing with potential buyers for these homes. All that's going to take a lot of effort. And so we're looking down the road to make sure when July comes or into the fall or toward the end of the year that we can make all this happen for the town, you know, doing this service for the town. But the corporate partners are there. We've talked to them. We'll go back to them quickly because now we have something much more concrete to say to them. So we would appreciate that.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Any other questions by the committee? Okay, we have the request as an agenda item. Is there anyone that would like to make a motion on that?
I have a question on that. Do we vote on the actual funding today, or do we vote to send it to council?
We vote to send it to council.
Okay. Well, I would like to make a motion that we send this to council to consider funding Mount Pleasant Housing for All and in the form of a matching grant program.
Mr. Bustos?
Do you have a upward amount?
Oh, we could say the 50,000, I guess, as the number. Yeah.
Okay.
So.
I need to restate the whole thing.
No, I'll second that.
Okay, we have a motion and a second on the floor. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Motion passes. Thank you for your time, everybody.
Thank you.
Item four, we have a 4 and 5. We have an update from the Charleston Area Convention and Visitors Bureau, and then after them, an update from the Mount Pleasant Chamber of Commerce, just to let us know how things are going. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have with me Dan Blumenstock, who is a current board member of ours, as well as a former chairman, and also one of the owners of the Staybridge Suites here in Mount Pleasant, and also Ms. Suzanne Wallace, who's our Director of Education and Training. I want to hit a few highlights, both regionally and in some specifics as it relates to Mount Pleasant, and I'm glad already that the subject of hotel occupancy was brought up, because I think I can maybe shed a little bit more light on that. Actually, despite the hurricane scares we had in September and October and a lot of the rain we had in December, we actually still finished the year for the county up 2.3% in room nights sold. And that's an important distinguisher over occupancy, because occupancy is really only an apples-to-apples comparison if the inventory never changes. And we are adding more hotel rooms. For example, we had an additional 392 in Mount Pleasant at the end of the year and about 650-some-odd for the county as a whole. The real great story here is that Mount Pleasant room nights sold increased by 7.3% last year. So a lot more room nights were sold in Mount Pleasant than were the prior year. Now, the rate did drop a little bit, but that's purely a you know, a matter of supply and demand. You've got more supply, more than likely the rate's going to drop a little bit. The bigger thing to keep in mind is in Mount Pleasant, you've got another 346 rooms opening this year, which will have to be accounted for and absorbed as part of an almost 1,560 countywide that will open, and probably another 560 or so next year. And these are just rooms that are under construction. It doesn't even count things that are in final planning. I think on the one hand, it's kind of a daunting thing to be facing. On the other hand, it speaks to the strength of this market, that not just our local developers, but developers nationwide want to come here because they see the vitality of this market. And a lot of that goes back to our efforts to grow air service. As you know, we've had 500,000 more people this past year in and out of Charleston International Airport. Our existing carriers have added new service. Whether they're legacy, whether they're low cost, new cities, some of them have increased the size of aircraft. And it all kind of goes back to March of 2011 when we got Southwest, which was a six-year courtship to get them to finally start flying here. In fact, I'm wearing my Southwest tie today in commemoration of that. But that really opened the gate. That's what really changed our market and made it possible for us to do well. Our drive market is our bread and butter, always will be, but the reality is if we want to grow from the standpoint, of longer, extended length of stay, people spending more money, they need to be able to come from other places. And having those nonstop flights from places like New York, D.C., now we've got Minneapolis, Cleveland, St. Louis, Denver. I mean, we're marching further west. And it's that is what has truly been the difference maker. And, of course, we all know about British Airways starting to fly here in April, April 4th to be exact. That is truly a game changer, and it's why Charleston County Economic Development, as well as South Carolina Commerce Department, were our partners along with the Aviation Authority in making this happen. And that's the fact that a city or a community the size of Charleston could get an international flight has gained us the amount of press you would not be able to believe. To capitalize on that, we've actually got the counterpart. We have an organization here in the United States called the Society of American Travel Writers. We've actually invited over and are hosting the British Guild of Travel Writers April 14th to 18th. We've got 60-some-odd travel writers from the UK coming here. And the UK, behind Canada, is our number one inbound source market for international visitation. The Brits love this area for a lot of reasons, and I think we're going to have a lot more people coming to enjoy what we have for them. Another big thing that's happened in the last several years is the resurgence of travel agents. 10, 15 years ago, people wrote travel agents off. The market had kind of been winnowed down, and those who still are in the business are the ones that are truly booking a lot of business and providing a great service and value for their clients. Travel advisors, in fact, are responsible for $90 million in bookings over the last year into the Charleston market, which is huge. So what we did was we created a Charleston certified program where travel advisors, as they like to be called now, can actually become certified in selling this area. There's a whole course they go through and an exam they have to pass. And in exchange, they get that certification. They're actually listed on our website. So if somebody's interested in booking with a travel advisor, they can find, geographically located or however they want. And these are people who are knowledgeable on what goes on throughout this entire area. So far, we've had 40 certified and 175 eligible, and that program's only about 5 or 6 months old. Extending on the travel advisors through the global distribution systems, Amadeus and Sabre and the like, we've been doing ad campaigns that pop up on their terminals that they used to book. July through December, bookings were up 5.6% and revenue was up 6.8%. So travel advisors are definitely a part of the answer. As I said, there is a challenge from all this new hotel inventory coming online. And what we want to avoid is the knee-jerk reaction of, well, it looks like the competitive set's getting tough. Let's drop rate. So what we're doing is working with general managers and more importantly, the revenue managers that truly make the decisions about rates at these hotels. And what we're starting with is a series of meetings with the general managers at these hotels to get to know each other. A lot of them are new, and a lot of them just don't know each other. And you're not going to work together or work for the betterment of the community if you don't have that relationship. So just a week or so ago, we had our initial meeting with the GMs in the North area so they could know each other and then see what we were trying to do from the standpoint of, let's work to elevate the market as a whole. Let's not, as our chairman, Michael Tall, said, let's not be the first guy for the mad race to the bottom. That's not going to be good for this community. So we will be having an upcoming meeting for our Mount Pleasant Hotel General Managers. The date has not been set, but that's the next one we're going to be having. Short-term rentals, another challenge as it relates to hotel performance. We've been working very closely with the College of Charleston, with the City of Charleston, actually with the town of Mount Pleasant, on how do you address this. And one of the ways you do this is through a wonderful software program called STR Helper, for Short-Term Rental Helper. We were fortunate that Dr. Brumby McLeod at the College of Charleston discovered this, worked through it, and now we were able to underwrite the cost of the county being able to license that software. They do the groundwork for everybody else to build off of, and then the individual communities can get a customized version of the software for themselves that at a discounted price that then allows them to handle short-term rentals however they want to handle them. Great example of this is, you've probably seen what City of Charleston wants. They want to basically end it due to impact on neighborhood livability and the affordability and availability of housing for residents. Very understandable. This software is allowing them to do that now. They successfully prosecuted about 35 people. They've got a line of other people waiting to be prosecuted. They've even served people as far away as California, then made them pay for the process server as well as all the other expenses involved with that. The beautiful thing about that is these people are now putting their houses back on the market, and they go back in for residences. Now, Folly Beach, completely different story. 80% of the residences out there are not owner-occupied. Their primary interest was, is everybody properly licensed and collecting and remitting all the taxes they're required to do? This software allowed them to do the same thing. I know the town has a version of that now and is deciding, you know, how it wants to approach this. But the beauty of all this is, it's customizable. The solution fits whatever the challenge is in your community. And we've been delighted to be a part of that. We heard earlier from the housing people about people living close to where they live, which is a fantastic thing that we've been involved with as well. We just had a big job fair at the convention center last week, and several months ago we had one in Mount Pleasant, which we'll have again. The idea being finding jobs for people near where they live so we end traffic, or not end, but certainly have a positive impact on traffic congestion and make it where people can walk or ride a bike or whatever to get to work. So those are some of the bigger things that we're dealing with right now, some of the opportunities. Some of the things specifically that pertain to Charleston is we've launched a series of videos called Charleston Locals. They're on our website. And a lot of people that would be very recognizable. And the really interesting thing, I just found this out last week, is Ben Toy, who's a paddleboard guide on Shem Creek, and Corey Alston, who's a basket maker here in Charleston. Those two videos have received more views than any other, which I thought was fantastic, and a nice pat on the back for Town of Mount Pleasant. And those videos were launched in conjunction with the Condé Nast Traveler Reader's Choice Award recognition. We also had an editors in residence program with FAR magazine, which is one of the premier and probably cutting-edge travel magazines. We were able to house editors at both the Hotel Indigo and at the Beach Club, which was a great exposure for the town. And going back to October, and Kathy, I believe you were at this event, we hosted through the U.S. State Department the Foreign Ambassadors and Spouses event on something called Experience America. And again, another great event. And I'll wrap it up, so I know we're running out of time. We also have worked with the town on a feasibility study for a hotel conference center at Patriots Point as part of our overall regional economic development initiative, knowing that exposing people to community is the first step towards further business investment in the community, which I know the town would love to have more business in the town. And finally, the Mount Pleasant Visitor Center continues to do what we had hoped it always would do. It captures visitors on Highway 17 we may have otherwise missed. So in addition to the nearly 800,000 people we see downtown on Meeting Street, we serve another 14,000 people here. The beauty of it is the fact that we've got this great relationship is those 800,000 people that go downtown also learn about everything Mount Pleasant has going on for them as visitors. So that's what I've got for you. There's a lot more. If you ever need anything from me, call me. We'll go out for lunch, a cup of coffee, whatever works for you, and I'll spend all the time you want helping you see what we're doing to help not just the region but Mount Pleasant specifically. Thank you.
Thank you, Perrin. That was a lot.
Good.
Yeah, well, I had to cut down a lot. Anyway, there's a lot going on.
Thank you. We appreciate that. Any comments by anyone on the committee?
Well, since we're in front of all of the folks, and I don't think the cameras are here anymore, but that's okay. If we could, what is your name again, sir? I know we've met and talked.
Yes. I'm Dan Blumenstock. I'm one of the managing partners, so I have a partner in the business, Dan Blumenstock.
Dan, yes.
Staybridge Suites there at the
bridge. Yes, Dan, right. Well, and I knew you were Staybridge. So I just wanted to mention, again, just to repeat the comment that I made to Jennifer that she's now taking back to her folks. I would love it if you would take, because it'd be great to find out what would be the stumbling blocks of such an idea.
Sure.
I'm sure there are probably some, but when you start looking at, I've talked to one of the things that the north end of Mount Pleasant is very devoid of is enough restaurants, and especially, let's just say, date night, little bit fancier kind of restaurants. And I bring that up because when I talk to some of those smaller local businesses like Bistro Toulouse and Red Drum and some of these, they all said, we're having trouble recruiting enough staff as it is. And so when I talked to Jennifer about this idea about hotels and hospitality staff, I said, you know, you might actually talk to some of these folks and see if there's a way to coordinate something where it could be a room and board, at least one mm-hmm. meal a day kind of arrangement. Imagine how much salary a business like yours could save on if your compensation package includes room and board, but you don't have to worry about them commuting. They're living there. And it can't be a five-year arrangement, but maybe it could be a one-year arrangement just to get them off on their feet as they get started. So anyway, we'd love to hear anybody give feedback on how that looks.
Sure. I will respond by just saying that we're very much open to a lot of different opportunities. In fact, Perrin knows from my standpoint that when the CVB got involved with what we call workforce development and really taking on this this tact of what are we going to do? Uh-oh. I thought somebody was talking to me there. I was like, all right. But what we're going to do in order to address this, and so specifically Mount Pleasant, quite frankly, Mount Pleasant probably has the hardest time of any of the municipalities throughout the Charleston area because whatever statistics she gave, 72%, I think, of people that come from outside of Mount Pleasant. In our hospitality world, I'll tell you from friends of mine that are in the business in my hotel specifically, it's probably more like 90, 95% are coming from outside of Mount Pleasant to come work in our hotels and restaurants. Now, one of the things that we've just recently done in the Charleston area, and before I go on to that, I want to state this because we talk about Charleston, and I know we're standing here in Mount Pleasant, and that confuses a lot of people at a lot of different times because, like, why are you talking about Charleston instead of Mount Pleasant? It's because the Charleston is the brand. Mm-hmm. Quite frankly, when you're looking across, and I think this was said very well the other day, a visitor coming from outside of town does not understand the lines of a municipality. They don't know that they're going from Charleston to North Charleston when they go to the airport. They don't know that they're going from Charleston to Mount Pleasant when they go to Shim Creek. They don't even realize that when they go to Isle of Palms or Folly Beach that they're not in Charleston. So what we've recognized from a marketing standpoint, which is really what the CVB is we're a marketing. That's the whole goal, is to bring more people, which AKA is more revenues, to all of the businesses and more of the to the municipalities. You'd be very surprised the number of things, events that take place in North Charleston, but the rooms stay in Mount Pleasant. Ships that are at Dayton Shipyard getting repaired, those crews, I can tell you for fact, stay in Mount Pleasant. So, Tom, I see you have a question.
I was just trying to get you to be quiet.
Oh, sorry.
That's all.
What I will say, one of the things...
Didn't work, did it?
No, it didn't work.
No.
I will say, to follow up on that, from the workforce development side, so we recently realigned ourselves, and so the Greater Charleston Restaurant Association and the Charleston Area Hospitality Association have merged. That's effective as of about 2.5 weeks ago. We're now called the Lowcountry Hospitality Association. That is important for a lot of different reasons, because if you're a business in Mount Pleasant, you now can be involved in Low Country Hospitality. Thanks, Tom.
Okay. We got to move this meeting along. We are behind as it is. Appreciate your passion. Appreciate your breakfast pizza at the hotel. And thank you very much. Are there any other questions by the committee? Okay, thank you. Now the chamber.
You guys are all smart. I've got a PowerPoint. Do you mind if I speed through it?
You go do whatever you need to do.
All right. I'm Chris Stobbs, President Emeritus of the Congress. All right, y'all got me hooked up?
In a minute.
We've got a couple of board members here. Rebecca M. Holtz, head of our strategic partnerships. Brian Sherman, who is one of our executive committee members. I got Vicki Boyd, who's in charge of programs, getting our speakers. Eddie Phipps, our vice president. If I miss anybody, please stick your hand up. And of course, John comes to our meetings too. Now, all right, where's the clicker for the?
Okay, let me just get you there for a second.
All right, Mount Pleasant Chamber of Commerce. We are Mount Pleasant. This is what we serve is Mount Pleasant. Some of you have probably seen this, some of these things before, but let me give a little history real quick, and I'm going to zoom through it just so you can see what our programs are. We're not here today asking for money. We are just giving you an understanding of what's going on. The news lady already took off. That would be cool. I don't know if that makes the news. All right, Mount Pleasant Chamber of Commerce, background. All right, this organization's been around for a while. We were been around since 92 in some form or another. East Cooper Merchants Association, Mount Pleasant Business Professional Association. We were MPBA, Mount Pleasant Business Association, 2010. And then in 2017, we got together, felt we had a critical mass, decided to go ahead and do all the legal work and become the Mount Pleasant Chamber of Commerce. All right. What do you all think? We're a 501c6 organization, which means Chamber of Commerce. That's a little definition of what it is. I'm going to flip to it. I know we're out of time. So organizations dialed in like never before. Our membership is it's quadrupled. It is now 400. When I took over back in 2015, we were at about 100. Now we're at 400, or close to it, within five of four. I think we're at 395. All right, we've got a significant reach. We do our ribbon cuttings with the town of Mount Pleasant, which is a lot of fun. We try to send somebody out there. We get the notices each time one happens. What do we do, about 20 a year, you think? Yep. So that's kind of fun. It's a way for us to get in front of new citizens, new businesses, and sometimes it's our businesses that want to get in front of the town. All right, got our monthly luncheons. We're over at the Omar Shrine right now. We bring in probably about 150 to 200 or so guests each month. We've had Nikki Haley, Mark Sanford, and of course our own Mayor Will Haney, who did a great job and filled up the room. All right, many more. We had, here's some of the other names we've had recently. Next, we've worked with the town. When the bridge closed, we worked with the town into communicating with our businesses, how they can get around the town. When the hurricane came through, we did a report working with our partner, the Moultrie News, coming down to the town and learning about what the town was doing and communicating that to our businesses and to the citizens. We've got Before Nine Coffees that go on each month. We've got a Food for Thought business education series that helps our businesses learn a little bit about how to do business a little better. Then we have After Hours. We had one actually in this building not too long ago, a couple months ago, and those are really well attended. We probably get about 75, 125 people at each one of those events. Business Week. So we have our expo in September, and this is we try to coordinate with the town and with the Moultrie News and do some stuff for businesses during that time. In the past, we've even had that week designated as Mount Pleasant Business Week. All right, and then we have our Mount Pleasant Business Expo, which is probably one of the premier events going on in the town that's business oriented. So we've been sold out for 6 years. We work with Moultrie News Radio, Mount Pleasant Magazine, with the Business Journal and Post and Courier, and try to communicate what's going on in Mount Pleasant, try to keep people over here, try to get people to come over here, and just promote the area and say all the great things we're doing. We've sold out for vendors. We've worked with the media, as I said. Oh, and this is something we've been doing recently at our luncheons. We've been recognizing first responders, whether it's someone from the fire department or someone from the police department. And each month we get a different person, and that seems to be well received by the community, and we've enjoyed doing it. We give back. We give scholarships each year, trying to help someone who is a senior at an East Cooper, or a resident of East Cooper. I mean, they could go to School of the Arts, but if they live over here, they can apply, or if they go to Wando, or they can go to Academic Magnet, or Oceanside. Or even some of the private schools. We gave some money last year, and then we donate toys for tots during our December time frame, and then we have our holiday luncheon, which we love doing. This is we go over to Alhambra and we give some awards out, and everyone comes and we have a good time. It's a very nice social event. See, tickets are sold out well in advance. You can tell I put some pictures up there for some of the people in the room, and we give a little bit of money away to some of our charities, and then we're in the greatest town in the world right here in Mount Pleasant. That's what we celebrate. And then we're doing great things, and each year we do a little picture out here by Alhambra Hall. All right, I rushed through that, so tell me what questions you have, if any. And
thank you very much for the brevity on that.
I watched this, and I saw the...
Are there any comments or questions by anyone? I think you exceeded the Santos image limit for a presentation in the town, but... Anything to add?
I'd just like to say I think they're doing a fantastic job. We go over to the monthly meetings, and as he said, they're mostly sold out. I mean, there's a ton of people there, and it's fun just meeting other business people, talking to them, answering questions that they might have. So I think it's a great local organization, and we're glad that y'all made that step up.
Well, thank you. And we are volunteer. So, you know, we do have one woman who works part-time, but other than that, everyone's volunteer, and that's been huge. I've been really impressed by all the people who step up and do that.
Yep. Anything, Mr. Bustos?
Nope.
Ms. Landy?
Thank you for a fantastic job, Chris. Now that you're the emeritus rather than Shane who's taking your place. He's not here today.
Right? He had to go, he works for news radio, so he said he had one of his biggest clients, and he told me who it was, and then I agreed with him. Yeah, you're right. You need to go pitch that.
But anyway, we're excited about the future of that, and the growth you've had has been fantastic. Thank you.
Well, thank you. And, of course, you know, we have our board meetings here once a month. Was it third? Or it's the first Tuesday. John's been coming to them, but you guys are welcome to stop in anytime you want to.
Thank you.
Nothing secret. All right.
Thank you very much. Okay. The next item on the agenda is discussion and possible action with regard to the operations of Memorial Waterfront Park. Mr. DeMuir, can you hold our hand with that one?
Yes, sir. I think this particular item came from a member of committee. And so if it's okay, sir, I could defer.
Go ahead. It didn't come from me. It
didn't come from me.
Yes, that'll leave me. Yeah, absolutely. You know, we're talking about budgets, and what made me think about it, Eric, is when we started talking about revenue and how, you know, things are going to be good for the next 5 years, then we're going to have to start looking at options and things that we're going to need to be doing. And certainly... I've been watching Waterfront Park for a long time. I noticed the last administration, they cut the parking fees, and some things have happened, I think, that revenues for that park have gone down. And I just wanted to take a good look at it to see. And I know Tom's been with PRC, so he knows he's got a good background with the park as well. I just want to take a good look at it and see if there's options for the town to be able to run the park. Initially, when we first got the park back in 1999, and we started talking about it, I was an advocate for the town running the park, and I lost 8-1, so we didn't get to do it. But I think we should always keep in mind that we should always look for ways to try and increase revenue for the town and our citizens. And I think this was a good opportunity to take a good look at this and see if this is something that we want to do, whether we want to... you know, operate it and run the park, maybe bring back parking for non-citizens. You know, our citizens could get a decal for the car. And if you go to Folly Beach, if you go to Isle of Palms, if you go to James Island, you pay to park. Mount Pleasant's the only great place where you can come and park for free. And so I think there's some revenue opportunities for us, and I just wanted this committee to take an opportunity to look at some of these options and see if there's some things that we can do to try and, you know, continue the park running the way it is. They're doing a great job running the park, and we already have staff out there, whether it's police and public services and people that are already taking care of it. And I just thought that next step might be a good step for us to look at taking it over and being able to provide, you know, additional revenue for the town. So that's basically it in a nutshell.
Okay, any comments? I'll comment a little bit on that. I didn't know it was coming. I'd have done a little bit more homework, but when you say take over the park, you mean the pier? Because the park, the town operates right now.
Well, I think we ought to look at all the options, whether okay. it's the pier, whether it's, you know, the...
If the town is looking to generate revenue, taking over the pier isn't the way to increase revenues. Options like parking and things like that, I think, are all open to discuss. How we operate events could be open to discussion there, too. But it's a wonderful park, mm-hmm. great facility with a lot of options. If this is something that we want to look into, it might be a good idea to let the staff come up with thoughts and options and maybe bring it back to us for
idea.
Consideration. It's February right now, so that would probably be a budget type of thing, which is quick. I'm sure you guys are already working on that.
Yes, sir. We have some information now. When we opened the park, we did rely on some local agencies to help us do things that we didn't particularly have an expertise in, and that would be the Pier 1 and the operation of the Visitor Center the other. I think on their own, they do a great job running it for us, and I'm not sure, I'm skeptical as to whether either operation on their own turns a profit for the respective agency. Parking meters is different. It was 2013 when we pulled out the parking meters. That had a net value to us of about $50,000. I think we brought in about 90, and then the maintenance on the machines and everything it takes to collect them and all that was about 40. So there was a $50,000 net that we had there. And then, of course, you have, if you'd like us to look at it as finance committee, you do have that option where you know if we went back and charged for parking, it would produce some money for you. Events, you know, that particular piece would take more work and exploration to determine how best to go about that.
Is there any action that we should take on this? Do you have any comment? Did you have a comment?
Well, I was just going to say, you mentioned about the staff looking at it, and they already have some information. Maybe we can see what can be done to add to that, and I don't know if a brainstorming session or something that involves some of us throwing out ideas, maybe even email. I mean, it's all subject to the public anyway. But what you just mentioned, you know, it is nice that in Mount Pleasant, a lot of times you don't have to pay for parking where you do everywhere else. But let's face it, we have gotten to a place where you start talking about net 50,000. That's what the request from Housing for All Mount Pleasant was. And so if you can start saying, hey, if we can collect a little bit more, we can direct it towards certain projects, then it might actually be even more appealing. Hey, the fact that you're paying for parking actually helps our community provide attainable housing or something along those lines. So I would love it if y'all would. And also, Cooper River Room, if that's rented out for an event, that's part of Mount Pleasant's revenue?
Yes. Mm-hmm. No, not our revenue. No, it's retained by Mr. Lawson's group, the
CVB.
The CVB mm-hmm. handles that and keeps it. However, I think they would show you numbers that would clearly demonstrate that is their greatest revenue, but it does not cover the cost of operating it.
Oh, okay.
The way the operations work is whether it's CVB or whether it's Charleston County PRC, they handle all the staffing, all the maintenance, all the day-to-day, light bill, the air conditioning, you name it. We have the long-term capital cost to it. So if there is a structural problem on the pier, the town is responsible for that. Otherwise, PRC handles it there. CVB handles it for the Cooper River Room. I think there's one issue. I think that particular location only for PRC or CVB probably aren't money makers on their own. Whether you determine where to send some of the bigger revenues that come in, say, through accommodations tax, which goes to CVB, that amount of money far exceeds what it costs to operate the visitor center.
If somebody has an event at the waterfront park, it can be rented for events?
That's right.
And then is that something that comes to the town, or is that PRC?
It depends where it is.
Oh.
If it's just that, if there's an event on the pier, that is retained by PRC. If there's an event
say, a wedding reception or something at the Cooper River Room or something at the Sweetgrass Pavilion, those monies stay with the operating agency, which helps them offset the cost. I would say that while those can be significant, for us to take over maintenance and operation of both those things, those monies would not cover the cost of operation.
Yeah, that's Kathy, but one thing he did point out, they get about $500,000 from accommodations tax. So you're looking at that on top of whatever they are or are not making, as he said. So at the end of the day, they are making money. It's just maybe not be as much as you're thinking because of the losses that they're making, but they're still getting $500,000 from accommodations tax.
I think, if it's okay, could the staff, I know that you've looked at that whole area with one lens that was to have a great park for the citizens of the town. Can you maybe look at it with a different lens of revenue generation?
Sure.
With still providing great things for the public, and then maybe get back to us on that.
You got it. Yes, sir.
That work?
Good.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
All right. Thank you. The next item is consideration mid-year budget adjustments. Marcy?
Yes, sir. The following amendments are proposed for the fiscal year 2019 mid-year budget amendments. In the general fund, for revenue changes, it's recommended to recognize $57,653 in excess interest income earned. Also, to cover the cost incurred with Hurricane Florence from the fund balance emergency reserve, an amount of $507,865. And then per the town's fund balance policy, the true up of the fund balance based on the audited June 30th, 2018 numbers to be transferred to the capital fund per town council's policy is an amount of just over $3.7 million. For the general fund expenditures, we have a request for $42,653. That would get us through June 30th for two additional firefighters. These would be married up with the four that were in the budget for six to meet objective 1.4 of the fire strat plan to put four per each ladder truck that we have. There's also $15,000 included to fund Old Village Historic District Residential Permit Program Feasibility Study. And then the 570, those two FEMA amounts of the 507,000 to replenish the accounts that were impacted by Hurricane Florence. We would, and then you see the transfer to the capital fund of that fund balance policy. So in the capital fund, the revenue change would be that money coming into the capital fund on the revenue side. On the expenditure side, the $1.86 million would go in a stormwater reserve, and then we have that in the five-year capital or the CMP. And then the corresponding 1.8 for transportation, we would pull $200,000 out for design work for potentially the half going towards transportation, and going towards design fees for the interim improvements on Highway 41. The response we're getting from the county is that our request to expedite it, interim improvements is that they may, as a caveat, want us to pay that amount. So we would put it in an account in case that is the way it goes. And that's the mid-year.
Mr. Bustos?
Marcy, Eric, whoever's more appropriate to answer this question. Who is holding the money at the county for the improvement or the change in Highway 41?
The entire project or just the additional lane?
No, the whole thing. Whole Smiley.
Be Charleston County. They received the proceeds from the sales tax.
Okay. Have they already received and pooled that money? Do we know?
My guess is, I don't know for sure, my guess is no, because that money's pay-as-you-go, and my guess is that they haven't accumulated the amount necessary to satisfy what could be a $120 million project.
Okay. And I'll just say it right here. It's my opinion that we should hold that money. I don't know how that washes between us and the county, But like I say, I say it every month, we should be the masters of our destiny here with this thing. And I think we should approach the county and say that that money should come to us, because I think we can do it faster than they can. And I would hate to see the money for Highway 41 migrate over to 526. Just saying. Okay, that's all I have.
One quick thing. Again, there's a lot of people in this room that know this, but for anyone else who doesn't, and also if the public is looking at this information, that design we're talking about is the adding the southbound lane south of Joe Rouse, where we already essentially have the beginning of it, but then it merges in, so it doesn't really help that much. And again, as one of the several people in the room, probably a lot of us that drive that every single day, that is going to be huge. You almost can't overstate how much that's going to impact Highway 41 traffic in the morning. So the fact that this town has dedicated itself to making sure that happens as fast as possible, and I'm taking from our retreat the other day when Councilman Brimmer, who's on transportation, that this is something that they're talking about can be done in 18 months, which would be so exciting to be able to have the public know, hey, we're going to at least do one thing that makes a big difference within 18 months as opposed to 2026.
Thank you, Kathy. Any other comments? Do you need an approval from the committee to accept these?
Yes, sir. We need a recommendation.
It'll go to full council.
And a public hearing. Yes, sir.
All right. Do we have a motion?
I make a motion to accept the fiscal year 2019 mid-year budget adjustments as written by staff.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Motion passes. And that adjourns our Finance Committee meeting.
Thank you. You want these back?
I didn't think they were going to shut up either. I need to do a little better.
There we go.